Welcome to the Action Drug Rehab Hour. I'm Kerry Quashin. I am your host. I got Robbie Robinson. He's the intervention specialist from the Sheriff's Department, and he co-hosts a show with me quite often. And then we got a good friend of mine that I haven't seen you on our show since I've taken back the show, huh?
Yeah, it's been a while.
It's been a few years, and it's Dan Broyles. Dan Broyles is a pastor, and he's one of the heroes here in Santa Clarita, that's for sure. And he's also a licensed, he's an LMFT.
Yep.
And he's the pastor at Valencia Hills Church. So I got it all right?
That sounds
great.
You
want to add anything?
No, thanks. Just thanks for inviting me to be part of it. I'm also part of a nonprofit called Saga.
Yeah, tell me about that.
And Saga is a bridge builder between the faith community and the mental health community. Because sometimes those communities don't even talk to each other, and we try to bridge that gap.
Right. And we've done some stuff already. We're already starting. I'll let you talk about that before we get into the show, what we're doing with you.
Yeah, we're doing an event at the end of the month, May 31st, at Valencia Hills Community Church for teenagers and concerned community citizens on fentanyl and understanding it, how to even think about it, how to help people with it, even just how to notice it for parents.
Right.
And we're going to tag teams and do some stuff together.
That's pretty awesome. Also, we're also running a faith-based group over at Action Drug Rehab right now.
Yeah, that's been great. Thanks for partnering together. Just a lot of people don't just need sobriety, they need purpose.
Yeah.
And they need purpose kind of beyond even their own situation and trying to help out, kind of navigate giving guys purpose. And one of the ways people find that is in their faith.
Right. And I know that we started the group with you guys, and it's been awesome. I mean, the feedback I'm getting from the clients is just great stuff.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, because I think for people to get sober, you'd help the whole person.
Yeah.
The whole person, spiritual part of the whole person.
And a lot of times when people are in recovery, just fresh in recovery, they're mad at everything, God and all.
Absolutely.
So this group is kind of helping them come to terms of what they really believe in and what they need to where they need to focus. So that's great stuff.
Yeah, it's just great to work together like as different community partners for a common good. And the more people we can have in sobriety, the better. For everybody, for families, for communities, for the whole mm-hmm. Whole society.
And when people come into treatment, they're broken in every way. I mean, physically, emotionally, and spiritually. And I believe that we have to treat all of that: the physical person, the emotional person, and definitely the spiritual person.
Yeah, and that's what I've seen has been one of the challenges with some programs or other programs is they only help part of the person.
Right.
When you only help maybe the trauma part of a person or only the emotional part but not the whole person,
mm-hmm.
there are such limitations to that approach because substance abuse addiction affects the whole person. It affects physiologically, the spiritual, the whole aspect of a person needs mm-hmm. help and healing.
Right. The only time people want to believe in anything is, God, please get me out of this one, and I'll never do it again. And that works for a minute.
Yeah, and then they need a lot more.
Yeah, right. God gets them out of it, and boom, they do it again.
Yep.
So what we're doing is really starting to help. So you know what? A couple things. Number one, I'm pretty upset today because I was hacked from Nigeria. They got my Facebook, and they got my Instagram. I fixed the Facebook. I can't fix Instagram. So someone in Nigeria is me.
Oh, man.
So I'm really not real excited about that. But, you know, I was driving here this morning, and I got a couple text messages, and I showed you one. Miranda's mother, Linda, for instance, for an example. I did an intervention on Miranda, guys. When she was 13 years old, she was insulin-dependent, diabetic, and using some pretty serious drugs at the age of 13. Linda was her foster mother. I believe she adopted her, and one of the greatest foster mothers I've ever known, and I've known lots. But this poor kid, I mean, she just couldn't figure it out. So she passed from a drug overdose about a month and a half ago. Linda just texted me this morning saying they lost another one.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a mom that sent me a picture of her son, actually. And she said, another angel. And it just broke my heart because I knew the kid. 2 weeks later, you saw this.
Yes.
2 weeks later, she sends me another text with a picture of her daughter. And her
tragic.
Daughter passed.
Yeah, just tragic.
And then I know a kid that, a father that died from an overdose of pills, and his son died of an overdose of the same pills. They're buried together. And I've been dealing with this man, Robbie and I, have been dealing with this now for the past years. But you know, I've been screaming about this for the last 5 years. It's coming, it's coming, it's coming. Well, it's here.
It's right here.
It's the number one killer right now in this country from ages, they say, 18 to 45 is an accidental overdose due to fentanyl. And I'm gonna, I don't really buy that. I think it's 16 to 45 because I've seen so many parents that are losing children. And they're waking up in the morning and they're finding these kids in their bed. Gone, and it's breaking my heart. It's so freaking sad. I mean, I keep screaming on the radio. I do a lot of news stuff and seminars and speaking, and I keep screaming. It's gonna get you. Nobody's smarter than this drug. And where I'm going with this, these people are not dying from buying fentanyl. They're dying from using cocaine laced with fentanyl. From using methamphetamines laced with fentanyl, for buying pills they believe are either Oxy or Percocet laced with fentanyl. I mean, there's no real drugs. It is no good time to experiment with any drugs today or recreationally use anything today, because every time you use a drug, you're playing Russian roulette. And I spoke to a mom, Crystal, today. I know she's listening to the show today. And this poor woman, I mean, she did everything right. I mean, she stayed up with him. She put him in treatment centers. The night that her son passed away, she checked on him 3 times, Dan.
The fourth time, he was gone. Wow.
So I have so many people dealing with grief right now that I want to spend a little bit of time talking about grief and the stages and what's going on. So help.
Yeah, just grief, especially this type of complicated grief, can just be detrimental to a family. It's one thing to maybe lose a parent or grandparent after someone's lived a long life, but this type of loss is so shocking.
Yeah, because you don't even see it coming.
You can't see it coming.
You wake up in the morning, you go to give your child a kiss, and they're not alive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's so many more emotions and complications and grief and guilt, often with the parents that are associated with it, or the coulda, shoulda, woulda.
If I would have only.
Yeah, all those extra layers of emotion on top of just the normal grief makes it so devastating for individuals. And people don't know where to turn. They don't even know how to talk about it I would call the grief engulfing. Mm-hmm. That's the word I think of, is it's engulfing.
Yeah, because, I mean, first things, I mean, you got the stages of grief, of course. You got denial and anger and acceptance and all that other stuff, but the pain is unbearable.
Oh, absolutely. And most people who are grieving with this type of loss, they'll actually say the grief isn't just emotional. My whole body,
right.
I feel it physically. It's that intense. It takes over. I can't even eat. Or I'm not even able to sleep. All of a sudden, parts of my body isn't working right. It doesn't just affect the emotional parts; the whole being.
Yeah, you could get sick.
Absolutely.
Physically and really sick.
Mm-hmm.
Suicidal.
Absolutely. Yeah, because where's my purpose now? And did I fail as a parent often? And all of those questions. And one of the emotions I think that goes with it is shame. And shame is one of those topics that I would say we avoid at all cost. We all know what it feels like, but no one wants to have a conversation about it. So you have shame on top of the grief, and it's just devastating.
But it's something, and I'm just looking something up here at the same time we're talking, but it's something that everyone's going to be talking about now. Because I tell you what, number one, I don't know anybody who doesn't know somebody affected by substance abuse or alcoholism right now.
Absolutely.
I don't know anybody. That doesn't know somebody. The other problem is, and here's just some statistics, is 1 out of every 6 Americans will have a drug or alcohol problem in their lifespan. 1 out of every 6.
Yeah, well, I would say addiction affects every extended family. There's not one extended family, if you really ask honestly, say, tell me about addictions. If they're really honest, they're there. And often it's either someone really influenced by it or who's been trapped by it, or there's enabling happening around it, or the secrets attached to it, or the shame attached to it. Mm-hmm. And it's,
or the denial.
Yeah, and then families don't know how to talk about it.
Right. But it's something right now that we have to talk about. You know, I think some of the messages that we're giving is wrong anyways. And I'll tell you what my belief is and why I'm saying that. They keep talking about fentanyl. We all know fentanyl kills. But it's not fentanyl that they're buying that is killing them. It's other drugs that are look-alike drugs or cut with fentanyl. So I think the real message that we need to give out there is all drugs are deadly right now. There is no such thing as a safe drug today. If you don't go to a pharmacy and the pharmacy hands it to you, you can bank it's fake. So the message is we got to hardwire our children when they're young that all drugs are bad. Not Absolutely. Just fentanyl, that all drugs can kill.
That's right.
And we got to hardwire them together. The other problem, and maybe you could help me a little bit with this, is you know all those corny sayings that we used to have? Families that eat together, families that pray together, families that play together. Those kids do good. But the average parent today spends between 2 and 10 minutes talking to a teenager today. Two and 10 minutes. And it goes normally like this. How was your day? It was good. How was school? It was okay. You have any homework? I've done it. And they go right back into their room, and they're with their friends again. Mm-hmm. So the last thing a 14-year-old girl or boy does before they go to sleep is what? Say goodnight to their friends online, in person, face-to-face. First thing they do when they wake up in the morning is what? Pick up their phones, check their social media, say good morning to their friends again in person. And they say something to their parents. They go to school. Who are they with at school? Their friends for, 6 or 8 hours. So they go to sleep with them. They wake up with them. They go to school with them. Then they come home. In most homes, mom and dad aren't, if they're even living together, they're not home. So who's waiting for them? Their friends.
Absolutely.
So mom comes home, dad comes home and says, how was your day? It was good. What'd you do? Went to school. Did you have any homework? I done it. Did you eat? I already ate. And they go back to their room, and they're with their friends again. So these kids are connected to their friends, not their parents. Also, when you go to eat at a restaurant, everyone's on their phone. Moms are posting pictures of their hamburger, seeing how many likes they got. Dad's in space if he's there. And the kids are texting their friends. So they're not even eating together. They're not hanging out together. They're not going to church. They're not doing any of the stuff that we know they need to do. So what do we do?
Yeah, because these teenagers need connection with their parents, not just connection with their friends. A teenager whose only connection is with friends is danger written all over that.
Oh, my, yes.
They need connection. And one of the phrases that it started out in more as a marriage phrase, but I think it's great for all families. It started by the Gottmans, this phrase, bidding for connection. So if a teenager talks about some new video game coming out with a parent, and the parent just kind of rolls their eyes like another new game, that teenager is actually bidding to connect with that parent. Mm-hmm. But the parent, if they don't care about the topic, so they just dismiss it. But if the parent sees it as, wow, my child's actually trying to connect with me by telling me about this next video game, that will change the parent's perspective. But often in families, whether it's parent to child or marriage or whatever the relationship is, we only show interest if it's a topic that we're interested in versus
right.
Showing interest because of who's telling me the information.
Mm-hmm. And I think we as families, as parents too, we get lost in social media. I mean, it's one of the biggest addictions in the world right now is these phones.
Absolutely. There's some interesting, also, you mentioned even the idea of church, and I come from a pastoral kind of perspective. There's a woman out there named Lisa Miller. She's a researcher out of Columbia University. And she talks about how teenagers who have high levels of spirituality mm-hmm. have far less drug use, far less anxiety, far less depression. And it's off the charts clear. And one of the things she says is, if a teenager only puts their hopes in their dreams without any backing, When the dream doesn't happen, they fall off a cliff.
Right.
I wanted to say I'm mentoring at least about 20 kids, a few adults. And what you said, Pastor, is really true. So when I teach them after, I say, what's going on with you? Tell me what's going on. And they'll open up and tell me a few things. There is one success story from Action. One of the kids, he comes regularly. I've been mentoring him. He calls me, texts me. He texted me at 11 o'clock at night and asked me if I could make it. I had just slipped. I said, look, first thing in the morning, I'm going to call you. But he's connected. We helped him get a job, acting, and he's boxing. But I'm connecting with him, not just, well, hey, you need to come. What's going on with you? How you feeling? What it is? So he comes every week, and I'm seeing the progress in him because of the connection. I have one kid that is autistic, and the mother brings him. And I have all the students clap for him when he does well. And so we're connected. They see him as one of their own. They're connected. I say, make sure you shake his hand, blah, blah, blah. But the bottom line is connection. The bottom line is when people get connected, then you can talk to them about things that can enhance their life. So one of my things before I stop, what are you willing to give up to move to the next level? What are you willing to give up to move to the next level? And pretty much this is what Christ said. What are you willing? Are you willing to follow me? God says, are you willing to come to me? Draw close to God. He draws close to you. So my whole thing with my students is not everyone's going to be a great fighter, but to connect with them, to connect, to talk to them outside of just coming to box and train.
Yeah, and I think young adults, teenagers, I'm all for education and information. That's really valuable. I'm not minimizing that at all. But they crave connection.
Yes. I was just going to say that. They crave
it. It's their way to feel alive, to have purpose. And the last few years with all the COVID stuff has just fueled the loneliness.
Oh, man.
Yeah. And so the loneliness research is off the charts. There was a research done that came out about it, I think, 12 months ago that said over 50% of Americans are significantly struggling with loneliness.
I saw that. Yes.
I mean, that statement was huge.
Yeah.
And when we are in a lonely place, we look for escapism. Mm-hmm. And this is where addictions can run rapid in the space of loneliness.
Yeah. There's just, I want to get back to grief, but not yet. There's three categories of children in my what I see. Category number one, no matter what kind of a parent you are, you got a high-risk kid. They're going to do whatever they want to do, and good luck, that's going to be a challenge. That's actually the smallest group. Then there's the other group, which is the high achievers. And they know what they want to do. They want to be a pastor. They want to be a cop or a probation officer. They want to go into the military. They want to be a veterinarian. You know, and they're going to do whatever it takes to get to that zone. Then the largest group, guys, listen to this, is guess what it is? It's the fence sitters. They're the ones that kind of follow the pack, follow the leader. Now, we were talking earlier, families that eat together, families that pray together, families that hang out and do things together. Those kids don't want to do anything to let their parents down. Or if they're involved with church or any of that, they don't want to let people down or God. But with the lack of parenting right now and spirituality, these kids get lost with what? 2 to 10 minutes? No, they're lost with their friends. So now making their friends happy becomes more important than anything else.
Their top goal.
That's where we're losing our kids today.
Well, this is why you see.
Does that make sense?
Makes a lot of sense. And this is why social media is so big, because everybody has to have, quote, a voice. Everybody has to have, quote, an opinion. Everybody wants to be seen in certain aspects. Now, it's good to connect with your family, and okay. But when you look at it a lot, everybody wants to be seen. They want to be bigger than life. Everyone becomes a legend of their own mind. And so with that, when you're doing this constantly and then you're not achieving the likes, that can cause loneliness, that can cause grief, that can cause depression. So when you put yourself out there like that, and you're not living up to the goals that you think, because now you're on Facebook, and it doesn't materialize, then you start having other issues, Pastor.
Yeah, one of the things I find is the need for what I would say boundaries.
Yes.
And what happens, I have this conversation all the time in more of kind of a pastoral counseling setting. I'll say, who in your world has too much power over your mood?
Yes.
Who in your world has too much power over your mood? And it's amazing
in this world has too much power?
But it starts out with obviously the social media stuff or the friendship stuff. And when those things have power and then that thing goes away or disappoints or actually causes a little bit of harm, people are pretty desperate. And what do they do next?
Something that's going to make them feel better.
Yeah.
And if you think about it, here's proof. Let's say you have a 15-year-old. I'm sure a lot of parents that are listening have kids. Take their phone away for an hour. What happens? It's panic zone.
Exactly.
You don't have to take it away for a week. An hour is panic zone.
Yes. They're
lost. They don't know what to do. So we really need to check our priorities. But you know what I do? I want to get back to grief and loss. Because as we stepped into this office today, somebody came up to us and said they lost someone that was part of their family. I mean, Dan, everywhere I go, literally, I was in Lowe's, and a guy in front of me looked at me, and he said, "You're Kerry Quashin." And I already knew. And I said, "Yes," and I looked into his eyes, and I see the tears coming.
Oh, yes.
He says, "Thank you for trying with my child a few years ago, but we just lost him." It's kind of everywhere I go. So we need to do something about this. I mean, we obviously need to do something about the drug abuse in this world right now, and we're not winning the war, that's for sure. But we need to figure out a way to support these families that are losing family members, loved ones. Mm-hmm. So I want, when we come back from break, I want to give people some hope. You know,
absolutely.
Something that we can say. I don't know if we could say anything, but some kind of hope for something. You know, and if you guys are listening and you want to call in, by all means, call in. It's 661-298-5481 or 5487. I don't know which one it is. I'll let you know as soon as we get back. This is the Action Drug Hour. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Action Drug Hour. I'm Kerry Quashin. I'm the host. I got Robbie Robinson with me.
Hello.
A lot of times is my co-host.
Oh, yes.
He's a great guy, and he works at the Sheriff's Department as an intervention specialist. His job is out there to go out there and reach out and try to help people that want help to get the help.
That's true.
Or even convince them to get the help because they're worth it.
Well, yeah, I appreciate that. I appreciate that introduction. I just want to say something real quick. When you have, I'm noticing there are a lot of families that are, the family is doing well, the mother and father are involved with their children, but sometimes children are rebellious because they fear that there are no consequences. And there, I just had a thing about rebellion versus reality. And the bottom line is rebellion, a lot of kids do this because I just don't want to do this anymore. You know, I can do it on my own. I can make better choices for myself. But we all know the reality when you're young and have no understanding. The reality is you can die from using these drugs. You can die from loneliness. You can die from depression if you are not focused and, as Pastor said, connected.
Well, loneliness turns into what? Depression.
Yes.
And if depression is untreated, it turns into what? Suicidal thoughts. And if it's not suicidal thoughts, you look for some outside source to help you feel better. And that's
And we see this in the Bible.
Danger. I know that people are listening, and I know that we have some messages sent to us. Carlos, can you tell us what is going on the online? Because I can't see it on my phone. I've been hacked.
Yeah, so we have one comment that was just saying, "Hi, guys." And then in the same vein, she said, "I'm going to die from a broken heart." And that was from a user named Crystal, I believe, Anzalone.
Okay, I know who Crystal is. And what do we say to her, Dan? She's going to die from a broken heart.
Well, I would just say, first, your pain matters. And don't do this alone. And I know it feels excruciating to connect when you're drowning in grief and loss or sorrow, whatever the negative emotions are. And this is where I would say some type of help, a support group, talking to a pastor, a therapist, some type of help isn't optional but essential for your well-being. Because I think we were all designed to bear each other's burdens to some degree and not do it alone. When we need someone to hear our voice. And there's actually something about when we are in an emotionally safe conversation with someone who's caring, it actually helps us physiologically. Mm-hmm. Our body starts to actually function better when we're just hurt. I see this all the time when I meet with somebody in like a pastoral counseling conversation, and they'll say, "I feel so much better." And I didn't say anything truly hopeful or profound at all. It was, you validated my pain and you didn't minimize the pain. I think often friends and family will minimize the pain because it's so much, and that actually makes it worse.
And they don't know how to deal with it. So they say, time will help.
Yeah.
Well, let's get something straight. Time does not heal. Time does not heal. Time helps. It makes it easier to deal with, and you can live with it, but it doesn't take the pain away.
Yeah, the pain is still there. And one of the phrases I heard one time is, relational pain requires relational healing.
Say that again.
So relational pain requires relational healing.
Talk about
that. And I think that's why sometimes if you have great relational pain, let's say it's from abuse or something, a grief or whatever it is, going and reading a blog on grief isn't going to take it away. I'm all for reading and information, but we need the nurture of other people. This is where like a healthy group can make such a difference, and because I'm not alone.
And so many people aren't ready to do anything, but what they do is they isolate.
Absolutely.
Stay at home. They're debilitated. They can't do anything.
And that's why if you know someone who's really drowning in their pain, one of the things that you can say to them that will not be effective is, hey, give me a call sometime when it's rough. Because they won't have the emotional energy to send you that text or reach out.
Right.
You have to be, I think, a little pushy in a gracious way. Say, hey, I'm going to pick you up. We're going to go to a group together. Or I'm going to bring you to that counselor together. Or going to church together. Whatever that is, and some intentionality. Because they feel like there's shackles on their ankles when they're stuck in grief.
I have a friend of mine right now. His wife is dealing with brain cancer, and I called him, and I can see how he's shutting away from me. And I said, "I'm going to come and see you. No, I'm good. It's okay. You know, I'm overwhelmed, but what I am going to do, I am going to go regardless. I'm going to go and see him down in Beverly Hills, and he's really a good guy." I don't know of his relationship with God, but I do know that, you know, we were friends, and I'm going to just make that effort and not talk it, but do it.
And you know, a lot of times people don't want to burden other people with their pain.
Absolutely.
And it's not a burden. I know when somebody calls me and trusts me enough to tell me what's going on with them, it helps me.
Yes.
I feel good.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a burden, and there are people out there. Crystal, for instance, I love you, Crystal. I know you're listening, and you're awesome. And you're doing so much better than you think you are doing. I'm going to say it again. You're doing so much better than you think you're doing. I've watched your journey. I remember when you lost your kid. I've watched it from then to now, and you're mountains better than you were.
Well, and the other thing I would say to anybody that's struggling, don't try to make it all better at once.
It's a process.
Sometimes I'll ask somebody, I wonder if there's one thing you could do today that would make it 1% better.
Right.
If you think of the whole, and for some people it might be, I literally got out of bed and showered.
I was just going to say the same thing.
It's a small thing. It's not, went and committed to a 12-week, support group and did all this. That's not reality. It literally, for some of you, I'm like, I actually ate breakfast today and I showered.
That's right.
And that would be a huge success. So if it's too big, I always say, all right, break that step down smaller. And if they still say it's too big, I'll break it down smaller.
Right.
And they keep doing that until they can find something tangible that can be helpful for who they are as a person.
Whatever it is, however small it is, as long as it's something.
Yeah, I had a story one time. I was counseling this lady who, she says, I really know it'd be good for me as a human to get back into church. Mm-hmm. But I had some hurtful experiences in church before, but it's been 5 years. I know this is good for me. I know my heart needs it, a sense of purpose and belonging. And I said, so what do you think's getting in the way? And she said, well, I don't know if I want to like become a member, and then I'll have to be part of a social thing, and they'll ask me to volunteer. And she started thinking of all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And I said, well,
the reasons why not.
Why not to, right?
But all the reasons that are really good for her.
And I said, I just said to her, I said, why don't you, sometime in the next few weeks, show up late to some church, mm-hmm. show up late, go for a little bit, and then leave before it's over, and don't talk to anybody. And she goes, I think I'm going to go this Sunday.
How cool. That's great.
Because we broke it down. She thought of all these commitments and things you have to do and responsibilities and you have to do, you agree with the church or not, all this stuff. I went, no. She's like, can I do that? I'm like, absolutely can. Mm-hmm. You absolutely can. And she's like, okay, I think I can do this now.
Yeah.
If you look, Pastor, at people who have made a change, everything starts small. Mm-hmm. Even God starts small with you. And if he sees that you are interested in it, you're willing to make a commitment, he starts moving bigger, and then after a while there's a big move and you'll say, wow, over 4 or 5 years I see what's going on. And it's like that with addiction and these issues, as you said, both of you, it has to start small. And this is what happened with the kid that I was trained, that I'm training. Mm-hmm. I started speaking. He came and watched. I gave him a pair of gloves. He started coming. So now every time he wants to sit after class and talk with me. So it's now he's starting to get on his feet. And little things, small things are making it big. And I've learned this before we go on. Sometimes the smallest prayer will get the biggest result.
Yeah, and I know, Carrie, you've seen this all the time, is why don't you show up to a meeting once?
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Just one time. I've told plenty of people in the community, whether it's seeing a counselor, a therapist, whoever, why don't you show up for 10 minutes? If you don't like it, you leave. Mm-hmm. And I've told people to come to my office, and they're really nervous because maybe they wanted to talk about a family secret, and the anxiety is off the charts. I said, in 10 minutes, if you're not happy, you can walk out my door, and there's no hard feelings.
Right.
And it was, and you just kind of take the pressure away. Mm-hmm. So I think this idea of perfectionism and controlling the outcome gets in the way of growth.
Yes.
Right. You know, how many people call me or Facebook message me, if they can get a hold of me now with this hacking thing, but say, I want to thank you for what you've done. And that was 30 years ago, right? And I'm like, wow, that's really cool. How much time sober? Well, I got 3 years. It's like, I guess what he's trying to say is 30 years ago, you planted the seed.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Oh, absolutely. And then the other thing is sometimes projecting past experiences onto future results. So let's say they had one bad experience with a therapist, with a group, with mm-hmm. a church, or whatever it is. And as a result of that, I'm never doing it again. Mm-hmm. Any of those things that can be helpful for their well-being. I'm like, so wait a second. You're giving that experience so much power over your future.
Right.
And they'll say, oh, I didn't think of it that way. I said, so would you say to your child who had a bad teacher, let's say, oh, education's done for you. You had one bad teacher, now you're
all
done.
Teachers are bad.
They're all bad. I'm not going to ever go to college, and right. I'm never going to learn anymore at a school. Of course not.
Right.
But we do that sometimes, and sometimes struggles and pain can make us think in those ways.
I hear it all the time. I'll never get into another relationship again. Everyone hurts me.
Right.
No, everyone maybe that you've hung out with in the past might have, but that doesn't mean everyone's going.
You might have a broken picker.
Yeah, you might have a broken. I was just going to say that. You might have a broken picker. Exactly.
When
you start feeling better about yourself, you surround yourself with people that treat you better. It's just part. That's true. Human nature.
And sometimes I was telling some of my fighters, some of your best.
Real quickly, I know Crystal's on. I want to focus a minute on Crystal. So I just want you to know that you're doing a whole lot better than you think you're doing. I'm super proud of you. I know you came with me and you spoke. You've been on this show. And every time you speak with me or do something, I get people telling me, wow, thank you for having her. So not only are you doing better, but you're saving lives, and I want you to know that we appreciate you.
So it sounds like, and I don't know, Crystal.
You need to know, Crystal. Crystal needs to get a hold of you.
But it sounds like you've seen her pain even be used for good.
Absolutely.
There's great good that's come out of her pain. I'm not trying to say it to minimize the pain, but there's good that's come out of the pain.
Even more, I've seen her pain save lives.
That's huge.
I have, because when we speak or we do things like that, we don't know, but we're actually saving lives. We know when we lose people.
That's right.
Because we know. But if we're not losing them, we don't know that we had something to do with that. Crystal, you've had something to do with saving lives. I know that for sure. People have told me. So keep doing what you're doing. Dan, what's going on at the church that we can do to help people? Oh, give them something. Give them some information. What are you guys doing up there?
Sure. We have ongoing groups that are open to the community. I think one of the misconceptions is groups that we do and other churches do this is that it's only for like its members or only people that attend. And I would say our church and other churches provide groups. Like a lot of churches have a grief share,
right?
Which we're starting one in August, and other churches have that. It's a great place for anybody who's lost someone to death. And grief shares across the country, actually. You can just like go on their website, put in a zip code, and find one in your community.
So grief share.
Grief share is called.
And you guys are starting.
We're going to do that, starting a daytime one in August. I know other churches are going to do some evening ones in the fall, too. And grief share is a great program on just how to navigate the complications of grief. So that's one. We also have a ton of groups, some in person, some on Zoom. We have a group right now for grief for those who've lost someone to suicide called You're Not Alone. That meets.
Which is huge right now, especially after COVID.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And we have other groups. I'm leading one right now on Zoom called The Power of Secrets, How Family Secrets Affects People. Doing all sorts of other types of groups that we have something called Spiritual Care, How to Help a Friend Who's in Need, right. How to ask questions that draw them out, that's not judgmental. And these are always open to anybody, whether they come to our church or not. We just want to equip people to care better. So, 'cause when people are connected, they just do better.
That's right.
And the best first line of help isn't a professional. Mm-hmm. It's not the professional pastor, therapist. It's actually the friends and family that know them already. And so these spiritual care classes, we offer them throughout the year. We start another whole series of them, an in-person and Zoom version in August. It's what do you say to that friend who's grieving? Or what do you say to that friend who just went through a divorce? Or what do you say to that friend who just lost their job? Because whether it's in everyday life or church life, people have said some hurtful things with good intentions.
Right.
And it hasn't been helpful. And so we want to equip people that how can you step into someone's pain? Because normally we want to avoid it because it's awkward and it's uncomfortable and it produces anxiety in us. How do you step into it in a way that's really genuine and caring?
Gotcha. Not one of those, hey, get over it.
Yeah.
Your life's so good.
Or even like I hear faith-based Christian cliches, let go and let God. Or
right.
These cliches that I would say really aren't helpful to people who are struggling. Right.
Sometimes just a help, an open ear will help, and a nice little pat on the back or a hug,
absolutely,
is what it takes.
And actually, if you give too much information to someone who is in deep emotional pain, you'll actually increase their anxiety because they'll be flooded.
Yes. Exactly. On that note, we're going to go ahead and take a break. We will be right back. Welcome back to the Action Drug Rehab Hour. I'm Kerry Quashen. I'm your host. I've got Robbie Robinson and Pastor
Hello.
Dan Broyles with me. And you know what? We've been talking about grief, grief recovery, different types of grief and pain and all that stuff. We got about 8 minutes left. I'm handing it to you. But I am going to apologize. I know people have been calling myself trying to call in. But I apologize for not being able to answer it. Dan, you are on.
Well, first, I would say in our current culture, you'll hear a phrase when someone is not showing much emotion in their grief as being strong. Oh, they're being so strong, which often that means in today's world, they're being numb to their pain.
What's the first stage of grief? Denial.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So it's interesting how we relationally reward those who stuff their pain. Mm-hmm. Oh, they're so strong, which is an interesting phrase, which really means they're avoiding some of the emotions that need to be addressed. And I've done a lot of counseling over the years, and I've never heard the following. You know, I just stuffed all my layers of grief, and now I'm better.
Mm-hmm.
I've never heard that story. I've heard lots of stories, but never that one.
When you shove that pain down inside, what's going to happen eventually?
Yeah, it's like trying to keep a beach ball underwater forever.
Exactly.
It's going to come out somehow. And so one of the best ways to have some healing from grief is to face the grief.
Yeah.
And that is so counterintuitive because it's so painful. But to face the grief, especially to do it with somebody or with a group or with that best friend, is essential. Because grief that is not dealt with, not processed, will always find its way to the surface.
Always.
Always.
And most of the time in some pretty seriously negative ways.
Oh, and for some people, it's literally their health. Mm-hmm. I've talked to some people who have autoimmune issues, and I'm like, oh, tell me about some of your pain and loss. And they're like, well, there's this, but I'm fine. And the body can't lie to us. We can lie to our brains can lie to us. But our bodies don't lie sometimes when it's a sign that something needs attention.
I always say, listen to your body. It will talk.
Yeah.
Always.
Absolutely.
Yeah. There's also different kinds of grief.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's not.
Yeah. It's not just death. I mean, there's so many different types of losses. I mean, anywhere from, I mean, just think of that. Let's say you have a 60-year-old who is excited he gets to retire, but then has a stroke. Mm. And can no longer do some of the physical activities that he was hoping to do in his retirement age. And now, let's say his partner or spouse is now in a little bit of a caregiving role too.
Right.
Right?
Right.
But actually, both of those people are grieving. Mm-hmm. There's grief and loss going on, both for his physical condition and maybe the trips they were going to take on, now they're not going to.
Right.
There's grief and loss there. There's going to be grief and loss in someone's role.
Mm-hmm.
So I have two teenagers. One's getting ready to go off to college here in the fall, which obviously I'm excited about. But there's going to be grief.
Of course.
Well, thanks. Excited. But there's also grief and loss.
That's right.
How roles change. Even there's grief and loss when people move. Mm-hmm. There's grief and loss, I would say, with a dream that has died.
That's a big one.
That's actually. A huge. There could be a whole show on that one.
Because all of a sudden your purpose is what you've been living for is not there anymore.
One of the phrases that keep coming up in my office is, I sense such grief and loss about what you thought life would be like at this stage of your life.
Mm, right.
I'll say, if I had met you 20 years ago and said, here's where you're at in 2023, and there's just tears.
Yeah.
There's just tears. They thought I'd be in this different place with my family or my career or my education or I thought these things would have happened by now, and very few of them have happened how I wanted. And people don't know what to do with that. They don't know how to talk about it or process it.
Mm-hmm.
And so often, sometimes someone will come to me and say, I just don't understand why I'm not motivated. I'm struggling for motivation. And they'll say, hey, well, what's been going on the last year or two? And by the end of the conversation, I'll say, it sounds like you've had about 6 or 7 losses, you just told me. And that's going to affect your mood. I mean, if you have a best friend who moves away, that's a big loss. Maybe you're going to start a business on the side. It didn't work out. That's a loss. Or even you go unemployed and now you don't have the financial means to do some of the things you want to do.
Right.
These are all losses.
The job you wanted to get, you didn't get.
Yeah.
The job you had went away.
These are all losses. And
your dog.
Yeah.
Your animal. That's
absolutely
big.
A connection point with an animal. But what happens in our culture, we don't know how to process these losses.
Right.
I guarantee families in about 2 months are going to be sitting around the 4th of July saying, hey, let's talk about our losses. There's no way that's going to happen. We don't know how to go about, but they have such emotional, relational impact.
Right.
And people feel like, people start thinking, what's wrong with me? So one of the resources we've developed recently is called Family Stress Support. Family Stress Support, and it's available to actually any family in Santa Clarita. And it's always completely voluntary. It's not connected to any government agency.
Doesn't cost a dime.
Doesn't cost. You don't have to be part of our church. All these things. And if anybody's interested, they can self-refer. someone can then reassign them someone to support that family and be an advocate for resources for them. They'll even come to their home if needed or do it by Zoom or phone and say, how can I be an advocate for your family's needs and step into it for the next few months? So
how does somebody get a hold of your church, you, the groups that, that you all have and all that stuff?
So you can go to valenciahills.com/care or valenciahills.com/family-stress-support or call the church and 775-1885 and just call in and say, I'm looking for help. If you don't even know where to start, you can just call and say, my family's struggling. I just need help. And even if we can't help you, we love working with other community partners to figure out who can help, because there's other wonderful community partners out there that have a passion to help.
Higher Vision has a lot of the programs you're saying, too. I'm part of Higher Vision, and they have things like grief and other things that can help the community. So, yes, it's at Higher Vision also.
Biggest thing, guys, is reach out, man. Yes, don't try to do this alone.
That's right. That's
essential. There are people who really, really do care and want to be there for you. Reach out. Let them be there. I read something a long time ago, and it's and then we got to close. Let us love you until you can love yourself.
Yes.
On that note, I want to thank you, Dan.
Thank you so much.
Always appreciate you and everything you